The known universe, with its heroes and marvels. But what of the darkness? In our modern world, this is where monsters dwell.
James, how's that reading going? Ready to talk some more Star Trek?
Oh, Jesus. I know how to read. I promise you, I know how to read.
This is not a Hooked on Phonics situation.
No.
Okay.
I know how to read. I've read books before. I've read Star Trek novels before. I don't know why I'm having such a hard time getting through this book.
Okay, James, it's not just you. Spoilers for whenever we maybe someday come back to this. But it's not very good.
No, I could be reading a Peter David Star Trek novel, or I could be reading Chris Claremont's X-Men. I'm just, it's just boring.
It's also from a very weird time in both franchises' continuities.
Yeah, like it's right after First Contact, like a year after First Contact.
Right,
the Trek crew. So I guess around the time of Insurrection.
Okay, I like Insurrection. It's fun. It's goofy. Insurrection is the tone is a little closer to like Star Trek 4 or Star Trek 5, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
I don't think I would put in the same category as Star Trek 4.
But that's what it's going for. The lighter, more humorous approach to things.
Okay.
It also just feels a lot more like a feature-length episode of Star Trek, as opposed to being something the scale of, like, the epic movies that had happened previously.
I guess part of my problem with it is it doesn't go with my preferred Picard ship, which, of course, is, you know, Beverly Crusher.
Sure.
But neither does this novel, because you got Picard Pervin on Storm over here.
Yeah.
It's like, we were talking about this before, like earlier, like we were talking about like Charles Xavier being pervy. And I do not like Charles Xavier in romantic relationships. We talked about this when we did the Hitting Years
podcast. Like, so ideal Xavier, ace, right?
Oh, yeah. Ace. Just for my own sanity. Completely ace. No bird lady queens. No Moira. No, Gene. No.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Right. I am okay with pairing Gene with multiple other characters, but not Charles Xavier.
No. Like, although I actually think she'd do better than Wolverine.
Sure. But, you know, if she and Logan and Scott and Emma want to be off in their little pan pod on Krakoa, like that is fine.
Yeah. Like, I'm actually fine with the throuple. I don't think that's the thing anymore, because I think Krakoa fell, maybe.
It did. Yeah. They're about to relaunch all the books. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gail Simone's writing one. Looks fun.
Yeah, I like Gail Simone. Yeah, eventually I'll get to Krakoa stuff. But like I said, I get into this book and I'm thinking to myself, let's go read another issue of Claremont's X-Men.
Right.
Because like the writer here, I mean, he's fine.
But he's fine.
He writes the X-Men like they're teenagers.
Right. I think I complained about that when we were talking to Andy. Yeah.
Yeah.
They all behave like children, especially Angel.
Angel. Why is Angel zooming around like a kid,
brooding,
on
grumpy, multiple times affected by Apocalypse, like Archangel.
Like just he's zooming around like a kid on wheelies. It's like, fuck you, Starfleet. What is going, like, okay, the stuff on the planet's interesting, it's fine,
but there's a whole sci-fi novel baked into this that really doesn't have anything to do with Star Trek or X-Men that's actually kind of compelling.
Yeah, But the
it seems like that's the book he really wanted to write.
The minute we get back on the fucking Enterprise, Trey, like one of my most beloved sci-fi settings of all time, I have fallen asleep to Enterprise engine sounds before.
And I'm going to bet you have not even gotten to Holodeck Charles Xavier yet.
Oh, I have.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yeah. Dr. Crusher makes Holodeck Charles Xavier on the holodeck, which she seems like she wants to jump on like grandma's candle.
Well, I mean, as much as we were just complaining about Charles Xavier and romantic relationships, she's got a type.
Yeah. It's weird. I don't have a problem with Picard having romantic relationships. That's what I was about to say. But I definitely have a problem with Xavier having romantic relationships. Even
because he's a mentor to children.
Even if it's Patrick Stewart.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's fair.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's kind of established he purrs in some of his children. Like, I get that, like, Stan maybe didn't mean for Xavier to be that much older than his students at the Silver Age. And back in the day, it was totally appropriate for professors to, like, marry their grad students. And
rules had not been formalized in the way that they probably should have.
Yeah. By the way, Trey, which professor are you marrying?
Huh.
Anyway.
That 15 minutes in to say, we're not talking about the Star Trek X-Men novel today. Sorry, guys.
No.
We really might come back around to it at some point.
Okay.
And you know, we'll think on it a little bit and circle back. I don't think we would do a whole episode on it is the thing.
No.
But maybe if we could pair it with something else that's either another X-Men crossover or another Star Trek something.
Yeah, maybe we could get another, like a guest host on and talk about it. That'd be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Someone who could maybe change our minds on it.
Someone who likes it, because right now it's neither of us.
So we're not calling Andy.
No.
because he got angry at the very idea.
he would have us barred from the UK. Although, we mentioned the UK.
We did.
How about this?
Yeah.
You remember the Captain Britain and MI-13 series?
I love that series.
Oh, yeah. It's real good.
Woefully short-lived.
Oh, one of the best things to come out of Secret Invasion, bar none.
The best part of that event.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, if Secret Invasion... You know what? Let's You want to talk about Captain Britain and MI-13?
The four issues of the Secret Invasion arc?
Why not all of it?
Yeah, hey. It's what, 15 issues and an annual?
Yeah. So, like,
absolutely,
we'll do the first four issues now, right now.
Right.
And then maybe next episode, do the rest of it.
Hey, you got a deal.
Hold on. Knock on wood, it doesn't turn into another Planet X situation. Although I seem to remember liking the second half of this book. So
it's got Draculas.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, it's got vampire cannon.
It's got moon Dracula.
It's got a vampire cannon on the moon.
Yes.
Yes.
We're doing this. We are so doing this.
Okay, cool. So break out a cup of tea in the Jammy Dodgers.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back with a look at Captain Britain and MI-13, number 1 through 4, right after these messages.
Where am I?
In the Palace of Glittering Delights.
Who are you?
I am Andrew Leyland, and for over 200 episodes, I have covered everything genre-related, from the obvious things that everyone talks about, Star Trek, to deep dives into the early issues of The Amazing Spider-Man via the obscure, such as ITC's experimental science fiction dramas The Champions or Department S.
It's very cosmopolitan. You never know who you meet next.
In the Palace of Glittering Delights...
Okay, let's get this show on the road, gang.
Available from Two True Freaks and via your podcatcher of choice.
Into the eyes of the dragon and despair!
Orion Pictures presents John Boorman's Excalibur. A world of magic. Mystery. And splendor. Rated R. Starts Friday, April 10th. Check newspapers for local listing.
Welcome back to Tomb of Ideas. Our first issue for today is Captain Britain and MI-13 Number 1, written by Paul Cornell, penciled by Leonard Kirk, inks by Jesse Delperdang, colors by Brian Reber, letters by Joe Caramanga, and the editor is Nick Lowe. Our title for the first arc, really, The Guns of Avalon. This is part one. The secret invasion has begun. Skrulls have secretly infiltrated Earth, all levels of government and military and superhero teams. They are revealing themselves, and a massive army of Skrulls has arrived to unleash essentially a wave of super Skrull variants that are sort of the commandos of their army. We open in this issue in a prison in London, sort of a secret black site prison, where a Skrull who looks like John Lennon is being held captive, and a government operative has approached him and is about to execute him in cold blood when Pete Wisdom attacks the government operative, revealing him to in fact be a secret Skrull. He saves John, and we then cut to the skies over London, where Captain Britain is in pitched battle against multiple super Skrulls, one of which has Ghost Rider powers and Iceman powers and maybe some angel wings, and the other appears to be a Morbius Skrull who also has some fire powers.
So, like, one of them is Legion of Monsters. The other
right.
is the Challengers.
Oh, right, right. Iceman, yes. That's exactly right.
He's
because
Hercules.
I remember this now.
Yep.
In Secret Invasion, a lot of the Super Skrulls were, like, specific teams. So there'd mm-hmm. be, like, an original five X-Men Super Skrull or whatever. So, yeah, yep. Legion of Monsters and Champions.
Yeah. Yeah. And
very cool.
It's very cool. And, like, it starts super cool. I will say right now, I am not a fan of Secret Invasion, either the comic series or, sadly, the Disney Plus series.
Never finished the Disney Plus series.
Oh, you're not missing
I think
much.
I got to, like, the penultimate episode and checked out.
Yeah, you could actually argue that Marvel didn't finish the series either. But, oh, if the Disney Plus series had been this...
You mean if they'd had a Morbius Skrull flying around, shouting it's Morbin time?
Yes! And, like, you know, Captain Britain flies in and saves the day. Uh-huh. Yes, that would have been... Oh, that would be a great way to interest Captain Britain, considering most of the series takes place in London.
Right,
for
right.
some reason.
At the very least, they could have introduced MI-13.
Absolutely, yes.
And Pete yes. Wisdom, for that matter.
Is Pete Wisdom a mutant? Like,
he is a mutant.
So they might not have had the rights yet to mutants in that part of production.
When that started production.
Yeah.
By the time it finished, they did. Because yeah. they mentioned mutants in Ms. Marvel.
Yeah. Although this was, I think Secret Invasion was supposed to be before
It had been at least written before Ms. Marvel, yeah.
Yeah.
The releases all got jumbled up because of COVID, but...
Yes, but at least we got Olivia Colman.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the better parts of the show.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. As opposed to, like, Samuel L. Jackson kind of just sleepwalking through the series.
Right. Ugh. Right.
It's hard to say it's true.
Yeah, he's anyway. Not exact... Yeah, he's not exactly Gary Oldman in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
No. No. Although, actually...
It's a good one. It's a good one. Yeah. You should check it out. Like, everybody who's anybody in, like, contemporary British film pops up in that movie.
Oh, okay.
Cumberbatch is in it, actually, as Gary Oldman's sidekick. So anyway, Captain Britain fighting Super Skrulls in the skies above London. We cut down below where Dr. Faiza Hussein is treating the injured and taking care of people in the wreckage of the battle. The Black Knight rushes in and Woo! Takes out some Skrulls. Good old Dane Whitman.
He looks so cool here. Ah, he looks so good.
He's got his helm on, but he's also got the leather jacket look.
Yes.
With the scabbard slung over his shoulder. It's
yes.
pretty cool.
Not a laser sword. And that's fine with me, actually.
I prefer the laser sword.
Yeah, but like when we did our phase rope game, this was the
yep.
this was the version I was imagining.
Yep.
And Kirk
and of course,
amazing here. I'm sorry.
Yes. And of course, Dr. Hussein is just as taken with him as we are, because she's a little bit of a superhero fan. And they agree to work together. She will help continue taking care of the wounded. He will continue holding the perimeter and keeping the Skrulls away. we cut back to the interior of one of the government buildings there, where the Prime Minister is meeting with Captain Britain and John the Skrull and Pete Wisdom and Alistair Stewart from the old Excalibur books. So we basically have some superhero-y types, and we have some MI-13 types, and the Prime Minister says that effective immediately, all British superheroes have been drafted into MI-13, putting them inside the hierarchy of the British government. And they're trying to track what the Skrulls are up to, why they are focusing on the UK, when it seems like they would go after America first. And Captain Britain realizes they're going after the Siege Perilous, the gateway to Otherworld and Avalon, the source of all magic in the world. And so the Prime Minister orders this team, this ad hoc team of Pete Wisdom, John the Skrull, and Captain Britain, to rendezvous with Spitfire and secure Avalon from the Skrull invasion.
Spitfire, who fits very well into the purview of our show, as she is both a speedster and also a vampire.
Yes, yes. Spitfire, who we've not really covered a whole lot of invaders yet, but we should someday.
We definitely should. Yeah, she got bit by Baron Blood. No, yes. She didn't get bitten in Invaders, though. She got bitten
It was later.
In the Roger Stern Captain America run.
That's right.
With John Byrne artwork.
Yes. Yes. And
by the way, I really enjoy the Silver Age Avenger Super Skrull behind her on this page.
Yeah. With the wasp wings and the gold chest plate and Mjolnir.
Yes. Yes, fake Mjolnir. He just looks so surprised.
Yeah. And of course, Spitfire is a member of the Fallsworth family, just for reference. So her brother, I think, was the original Union Jack, maybe?
Her father
was the original Union Jack. That's right.
Union Jack, yep.
Right.
During World War I.
Yes. And her brother is the World War II Union Jack, though, right?
Yes. Yes.
That's what I was thinking of. Anyway, and so we have our team of heroes flying out to try and rescue Avalon. Meanwhile, Dane Whitman and Faiza Hussein are still in the wreckage helping people. Faiza gets hit by some sort of strange energy blast, which seems to have killed her, but we don't dwell on that for long because the helicopter carrying Captain Britain and Pete Wisdom is hit by an energy blast from a Squadron Supreme Skrull, I believe is what that is.
Oh yeah, that's definitely a Squadron Supreme Skrull.
That's Dr. Spectrum, right?
Yeah, I'm really digging some of these Skrull combos in this book. I don't remember digging some of the ones in the actual Secret Invasion book.
These are great, though.
These are fantastic, yes.
And so the Legion of Monsters Skrull is still there, along with the Squadron Supreme Skrull. They engage in battle with our team, who hold their own. And in the midst of all of this, the Skrull assault ship launches a missile at the Siege Perilous, looks like, and Captain Britain flies up to save the day, but is not able to stop the blast and appears to die as the Siege Perilous is destroyed.
Yeah.
So we open with the death of our title character.
Yep.
That's an auspicious number one right there.
Not actually the first time this happened, but yeah. And like I was saying earlier, Kirk's artwork here is so good.
Really is.
Like, I know we get another costume later on, but his drawing of the Captain Britain costume, like what I consider the classic Captain Britain costume, right. is really good.
This is like the Claremont Excalibur look.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed Excalibur. During that one Misfits summer, where I just read a bunch of X books. I really latched on Excalibur for some reason. It was good stuff.
That's understandable. It's a good one. And it's fairly self-contained. Like, it crosses over into events, but usually in a way where you can just sort of keep to the Excalibur title and you're fine.
Yeah, I think the biggest... We've already talked about the biggest detour.
Inferno,
it takes a detour to Inferno.
But even those, you can read on their own, and it tells you everything you need to know.
In fact, I did the first time around, so...
Yeah, so one thing I didn't mention in my summary is that throughout all of this, Pete Wisdom is hearing voices. He is hearing mysterious proclamations The hero will return. The sword will be drawn. Where's the next one? The sword will be drawn again.
Mm-hmm.
The land will be healed, and so on.
Yeah. And of course, we're talking about Great Britain. We're talking about a sword. We're almost certainly talking about Excalibur here.
Yes, yes.
Not the Chris Claremont book, but the actual, you know, sword, Excalibur.
Right, right. Which, we'll get into that. I mean, spoilers, it shows up.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just so excited about this book. I'm sorry, I'm going spoiler crazy.
No. We're good. But this also, it does sort of have this kind of epic, mystical kind of quality to it that we're opening with these prophecies, and the whole last couple of pages have no dialogue but are narrated by that voice. My champion, my captain, the young lion of London, you were always full of doubt, the doubt appropriate to a hero of many worlds, but the time for doubt is done, and now is the time of sacrifice.
There is a comic page I saw on social media the other day where Beast, I'm pretty sure it's from an Avengers issue, where Beast just decides to tell off Captain Britain, Brian Braddock, as basically being headstrong and impulsive. And it's like, this is why you're not an A-lister. And I'm like, first off, fuck that portrayal of Hank McCoy, because Hank would not fucking do that.
No. Hank McCoy is not a superhero gatekeeper.
No, absolutely not. The character assassination of our blue furry boy these last couple of years is... I see you massaging your temple. You're... Like,
look what they've done to my boy.
Yeah. To the point where I think in the current X-Men titles, they've brought a clone of him in whose memories go back to Defenders.
Well, so I don't know if it's stuck, but at one point, yes, the current sort of canonical Beast is so awful and so far gone and so irredeemable that they've basically pulled a Teen Tony.
Mm.
That the only way to save the character and have him be usable as a hero is they have resurrected... They so again, this is all X-Men stuff. They can all resurrect each other and their clone bodies and the whole deal, but they only have a memory backup going as far back as the X-Factor days.
Mm-hmm.
So like late 80s.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's... I know that they got as far as introducing that concept. I don't know which of the two Beasts is going to persist.
Yep, it's the second time within the last, 10 years that a younger version of Beast has been brought in because the current Beast is so terrible?
Right, so yeah, there was also the time-displaced X-Men where young Hank McCoy was like, well, fuck you and fuck this.
Yes, but back to my point. No, you're fine. We got on a Beast tangent. It happens on the show. We should talk more about Beast on the show.
Beast's good.
We want another Beast. You know what? We should do an all Beast grab bag one day. Just all
we
Beast.
We should. From different eras.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Listeners, if you have a Beast comic you want us to listen to, we'll do it. Just tell us.
We'll take we could come up with the list on our own, but we will take recommendations.
Ooh, we could definitely come up with a list on our own. Definitely, maybe. Ooh, yeah. Avengers with Perez and music. Uh-huh. Anyway, Beast tangent. But. I completely disagree with that assessment. Brian Braddock should absolutely have been an A-list character for years. It's just because he's considered a X-Men supporting character and hence fell under, I think, the X-Office's purview that he hasn't been a major presence in the Marvel Universe.
And that all of his early stuff was... originally published internationally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the early stuff was Marvel UK.
Yeah.
And so he didn't really make it in terms of American Marvel comics until he was deeply integrated into the X books, especially because of his sister more than anything else.
Yes. Who, if you don't know, is the current Captain Britain, Betsy Braddock, better known as Psylocke for many, many years.
Right. And then there's all the not to get on a whole other tangent, there's the weirdness with Quanon and the whole deal, but...
Yeah, yeah, we won't go there. We won't go there right now.
No. Fixed it. That's what matters.
Yeah, but I really like Brian Braddock.
Yeah, he's fun.
I liked the multiverse aspect of the Captain Britain. It's the idea that, like, he's the linchpin of the multiverse.
Yeah, before there was a Council of Reeds, before there was a Spider-Verse, there was the Captain Britain Corps.
Yep, yep. In fact, one of the Spider-Verse Spider-Men is a Captain Britain. Spider-Man
yep.
UK.
Yep, and when we first meet him, he is at the Captain Britain Corps headquarters and, like, excuses himself to go be yep. with the spider people.
Yep, yep.
Also, we talked about Captain Britain deserving a spot in the MCU, and there's a lot of people that I can envision playing the part, but in this particular read-through, I was kind of hearing Henry Cavill's voice.
Oh, you're a fan of that casting, are you?
I mean, I wouldn't be mad about it.
No, of course you wouldn't, but, like, is it a little bit too on the nose?
See, I think casting Henry Cavill as Sentry would be too on the nose.
You are not wrong. Although, apparently, they have cast Sentry.
Yeah, he's supposedly in Thunderbolts. Yeah.
Yeah, although they had to recast him because the guy they originally had dropped, the guy from Walking Dead, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I don't know who it
is. After having done, like, costume tests and stuff. Evidently, scheduling changes and script changes and such led to them parting ways.
Yeah. So, there we go. Kind of like how Emily Blunt was almost Black Widow.
Right, right.
And apparently is still upset about that. Like,
I could see that.
Considering that the movie she had to bail for was Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's not exactly a great consolation prize.
No. She's very clear, like, I did not choose to leave Black Widow for Gulliver's Travels. I had a contract which said I had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I will also just mention here in there's a double page spread, maybe 13 pages in. It's our introduction to Spitfire. And she straight up rips the throat out of one of the Skrulls with her teeth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Which I imagine Skrull blood's pretty nasty, even to a vampire.
So. Huh? Yeah, that can't be fun.
No. No.
And I'm trying to say, is that a Defender's Skrull?
I don't know. Like, I was trying
to figure
that out,
too. I can't tell what that was supposed to be.
I was, like, thinking, man, like, maybe UFOs? Like a UFO Skrull?
Marvel Wiki is saying it's a Defender's Skrull. Okay. With the powers of Silver Surfer, which is why he's gray.
Okay.
Namor, he's got little wings on his feet.
He does.
Valkyrie. Yep. Yep. So he has Power Cosmic and Namor and Asgardian powers.
But not Doctor Strange, because that's something
right. Because that's later. We'll see that later.
Yeah. That's something later.
It would have been funny if he had the little Nighthawk hat on.
Yeah.
But no actual powers from it, because Nighthawk, I mean, what even is his deal?
Yeah. Yeah. You're oh, just so, like, the art, the Kirk artwork here is just so good. Like I said earlier, his version of Black Knight is my preferred version of Black Knight.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
That's the thing, is all through this first, and it'll persist through the other issues too, but the heroes in this book look iconic.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Captain Britain looks the way you want him to look. Spitfire looks the way you want her to look. Even Wisdom looks the way you want him to look.
Even Skrull John fucking Lennon looks the way you want him to look.
I mean, who doesn't want to see John Lennon with weird tentacle arms and bat wings?
No. Like, you know, I remember when I took acid with the Beatles once. I mean, that actually happened to me. It was crazy times. Crazy times, listeners.
So,
that was a joke.
So again, totally. So one of the things we're going to be dealing with here is that this story arc is fairly decompressed.
Yeah.
So maybe if we move on to issue two, we can maybe have a little more to talk about getting into the meat of the battle a little bit.
All right, then. So this is Captain Britain in MI-13, number two. Same creative team as last time. And it opens with scenes of Britain responding to the death of Captain Britain. And there's a great line here. When Captain America died, Americans heard it in the American way through the media. When Captain Britain died, the British felt it in their chests. And you get that reaction of all these Britons to the death of Captain Britain is really good.
I can't tell if that's supposed to be, like, figurative or not, but I actually really like the idea that because Captain Britain's powers are tied to the country and its people, that literally they didn't just know that his death is something they all felt, like a disturbance in the force or whatever.
Oh, it's absolutely, literally meant. Like, I absolutely believe that. And then we go over to see some Skrulls stargating into the other world, and we return to our EMS friend, Faiza? Faiza's name, right?
Faiza or Faiza, I'm not sure exactly.
Faiza sounds right. Okay. Faiza, she's seeing visions of a sword, Trey. That will...
A real fancy sword.
Yeah, real fancy. Real fancy. And not the Ebony Blade. Oh. Nope. Nope. But of course, last issue, she got blasted with a Skrull energy cannon, and we thought she was dead. Like,
she looked all skeleton-y for a minute, like she'd been shot by one of the Martians from Mars Attacks.
Or a Dalek. Yeah,
that too.
Definite Dalek Ray things there.
Yep.
But you're right. I've noticed that, like, the Skrull tripods in this look like the Martian tripods from War of the Worlds, which I really...
Oh, yeah.
Really nice done. Nice little nod there. But she wakes up to discover that Black Knight has been pulled apart. Not violently, but just, like vivisected, but by, like, energy powers. Her powers. Apparently the Skrull cannon gave her powers of some sort. She's able to, like, just pull people apart. Like, not hurting them, just, like, pull them apart and see their insides. And it kind of reminds me of that Nickelodeon hero, the guy who flies with a swing and he becomes Inside Out Man.
He
was just an ordinary kid until that fateful day when he accidentally swung over the bar and learned he had incredible powers beyond those of any superhero.
Where are my pants?
He had become Inside Out Boy.
That's a deep cut for... She you know, zaps him again. He gets pulled back together just in time, too, because the Skrulls attack again. Meanwhile, in the countryside outside of the Siege Perilous, the rest of the team, I guess they're a team here, are feeling the sadness of Brian's death. And Pete's like, you know what? I got to swallow my pride. I got to get down on my knees and I got to be humble. I got to call my ex. And that is when his ex, a freaking punk rock fairy, shows up. And Trey, you were telling me that apparently this character shows up in the Wisdom series.
Yeah, so several things about this run, especially this first four issues, are kind of following up on the Wisdom Max series, which was also by Paul Cornell from 2006-2007. And so, Yes, she is a fairly... She and John the Skrull are both significant characters in that. This is Tinka Bellino's Hardleg.
Nice. Nice. And she's like, you motherfucker, why are you bothering me right now? I'm trying to defend freaking Avalon from a bunch of green-skinned fucks. What the fuck do you want? And she doesn't quite use that quite many fucks, but almost that many fucks. What the fuck do you want, fairy fucker? That's what she says.
Yes. And she's basically, if a traditional mythological fairy was also an Amazon from Themyscira, but also was really into, like, 90s to 2000s punk rock.
So, the perfect woman. Anyway, she's like, all right then, fine, I will take you to Avalon. And she does so, and of course the monsters and various magical beings of Avalon are in pitched battle with the freaking Super Skrulls. And they use a particular brand of Super Skrull here. They're using the scientific Super Skrulls, because what do you use to attack magic but fucking super science? And I'm using fucking a lot, and I apologize. I'm stopping the caffeine drip at this time. But meanwhile, in London, Black Knight is still fighting on with Faiza by his side. In Avalon, Pete is shown that Oberon is closing. That's Tank's father, by the way. Oberon is closing the gates to the multiverse from Avalon. Basically, like, they're not allowing the Skrulls to use this as a beachhead to attack the rest of the multiverse. They're sealing off Avalon from the rest of reality. In fact, they're saying, like, hey, don't open that door over there. That, you know, door that is definitely not foreshadowing for something later, because I just sealed off the rest of evil magic behind that door. Don't definitely, right. definitely don't open that.
There's no MacGuffin in there.
No. Despite what the voice in your voice says. And Oberon
explicitly
tells,
you must not follow that voice, is what Oberon says.
Exactly, exactly. And Oberon like says, here, go look at that cave over there. There's a sword there. It's plot or progression. Just go look at it. And they go and look at it. And of course, it's a sword and a stone. It's Excalibur. Who would have thought, Trey?
Certainly not either of us.
No.
Who have read Captain Britain comics before, most of which had the title Excalibur.
Yeah. Trace the price, to use an old English phrase. Actually, if you go far enough back in British history, it is an old English phrase, because they all spoke fucking French. Anyway, we then have each of the heroes try their hand at removing the sword, which, of course, doesn't work. Pete Wiz, what are you thinking trying to remove the sword?
You're not worthy.
No. And, John isn't worthy, and Spitfire doesn't even try. Spitfire's like, I'm not worthy.
Like, I am a vampire.
Yeah. Like, and she's really torn up about it, too. Like, it's...
Right.
So that's interesting. Meanwhile, the Skrulls are killing the Lady of the Lake, which I have mixed feelings about, because honestly, some tart in a lake handing out swords is no valid way to set up a form of government. I misquoted that terribly, but they then, kill the Green Knight.
Right, which they behead him, which is hilarious if you've read Sir Gawain and the Green Knight.
I have not.
So in Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, the Green Knight's challenge is he appears during the Christmas festivities at Arthur's castle, and he challenges any of the knights to step forward, and they will get basically one hit, and he will not do anything to block them. And after that one hit, the Green Knight gets to return the hit in a year's time. And so Gawain steps up and chops off the Green Knight's head with his one hit. And the Green Knight picks up his head and puts it back on his shoulders and laughs and says, see you in a year.
Ooh.
So the fact that they kill him by beheading him is funny.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Anyway, the Skrulls are collecting magical items like a D&D party on crack. And they are running them through a machine that combines them into one chain. It is really ostentatious bling. I don't recommend. And they drape them around their newest Super Skrull, which looks like a combination between Doctor Strange, Dormammu, and I'm thinking, what, Zoidberg from Futurama? Is that Loki down there? Okay.
No, I'm not sure what the... My thinking... So Dormammu for sure, Doctor Strange for sure...
Okay.
I think the horns are supposed to be Loki.
Okay.
I'm wondering if maybe, Satanish or something? No, not Satanish, but one of the more demonic characters, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
He's also got those metal claw mace things on his lower arms, and I don't know what their deal is either.
I thought maybe Spiral, but, no.
No.
I don't know. Mystical Super Skrull, hold on.
The wiki is not helpful. It only lists Doctor Strange, Dormammu, and Loki.
Yeah.
And the implication is others, but they don't really define the others.
That's, you're right. It's not. I feel like I need annotations with the series.
Yeah.
It'd be great if we could, ask Paul Cornell, hey, who's this supposed to be?
Right. Yeah, that would be nice.
I don't think that's happening. But then, it's fun. That's the end of the issue, by the way. It's a fun issue.
Right. Yeah.
I love the little story about, that Spitfire tells about the last time she saw Excalibur. It's like Winston Churchill's last day in office in 53, and he asked to see it before he leaves. And Winston Churchill's crying. I'm like, that's good stuff, real good stuff.
Yeah. And, there's a lot of cool stuff going on here. It's I love the spread of the Skrull, the technological Super Skrulls fighting the magic characters. There's a Deathlok Skrull, there's an Ultron Skrull, there's one that looks like maybe a combination of Iron Man and Dr. Octopus.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that I can't tell what the other one is. He's got metal cannon arms and he's got a vision cape, it looks like.
Hmm.
Machine. He's at the very top of that spread. Possibly.
Like, yeah. No, he's got Machine Man bottoms. He's got Machine Man legs. He's got the Vision cape.
Right.
I don't know what he is, because he's not Deathlok, because Deathlok's over there.
Because Deathlok's over there, right?
Over there. Yeah.
Right?
Oh, it's going to bug me now, Trey.
It's weird. But it's a really cool image. And all of the scenes of Black Knight just going to town with the Ebony Blade.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
This is an Avenger you're fighting. The Ebony Blade still says hello.
Oh, such good stuff. Black Knight doesn't get enough love. He really doesn't.
Yeah. He's another one who tends to get relegated to, like, B or C list, but probably doesn't deserve that.
No. Is it? Go ahead.
Well, just that the voices in Wisdom's head seem to be getting snarkier.
Yeah.
I can tell when you're lying.
It's so good. And, like, I'm really enjoying Pete Wisdom here, which is interesting because, you know, he used to just be, you know, Kitty Pryde's douchey boyfriend.
There was a time, yes. That was the early Excalibur stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then they had their miniseries together, Wisdom and Pryde.
Mm-hmm. That's on Marvel Unlimited, but Wisdom isn't.
Yeah. I think Paul Cornell really sort of took Wisdom and evolved him as a character, made him sort of a character that stands on his own, not just as sort of secondary character to the Excalibur crowd.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It says in the little next issue page here, it says Rise Letter at OfficeX@Marvel.com. So apparently this book was published under the X office.
That makes sense. Even though characters like Dane Whitman might make you think it would be more Avengers office.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Spitfire connected to the Invaders, which is more of an Avengery thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This book doesn't feel especially mutant heavy. But I guess no. Pete Wisdom is essentially co-lead of the book. And right now, with no Captain Britain at all, Wisdom is the closest thing this book has to a protagonist. And he's a mutant.
That's true, yeah. Yeah. Huh.
But yeah, that's all I can figure is because it's effectively an Excalibur spinoff, they're considering it an X book.
Yeah. So we're getting deep into the Arthurian legend here.
Yeah, we're starting to. Which, Excalibur. Well, let's go ahead and do this.
Okay. Like, I don't look Excalibur. Much beyond, like, I read Once in Future King when I was in high school, and that's all I got.
Sure. Excalibur derives from the Welsh, which I'm going to butcher because my Welsh pronunciation is terrible, but something like Caledwosh, which eventually became Caliburn, which became Excalibur, and there's no one story for Excalibur is the thing. There's the Sword and the Stone story that, you know, everybody knows some version of, right? That there's a sword in an anvil in a stone. Whoever draws the sword is the rightful king.
There's some singing and dancing animals. There's a cute owl. There's a story of a squirrel falling in love. Yeah, everybody knows. Is that not in all versions?
Or alternately, there's Nicole Williamson being especially creepy, and Patrick Stewart shows up for a minute, and young Liam Neeson is peeking over people's shoulders.
Okay, if you hadn't said Liam Neeson, I thought we were talking about Robin Hood Men in Tights for a second there.
No, the movie Excalibur.
Yeah. It exists, and I might have seen it at some point.
It's good. I like it. But anyway, so Sword in the Stone story, in some versions that's Excalibur, in some versions it's not. Sometimes there's more than one sword.
Okay.
And in fact, in a lot of versions, the sword that's pulled from the stone ends up getting broken. And the real Excalibur is given to Arthur by the Lady of the Lake later.
Interesting.
In some versions, it's suggested that it's not a replacement sword, but that the sword is reforged, sort of like Lord of the Rings.
Hmm.
But in any case, there's sometimes two swords. Sometimes Arthur has as many as like three or four swords. There's a sword called Clarent, which is the Sword of Peace. Which is for, like, knighting people and official ceremonies and stuff.
Not to be confused with Claremont, which is the sword of wordy dialogue.
Yes. Bane to letterers everywhere.
Oh, it's killed many of them.
Clarent is the sword that, again, is not supposed to be used in battle, but Mordred steals it and uses it to kill Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a sword called Sequence, which is a sword that Arthur loans to Lancelot at one point. there's a sword called Marmadoise, which is supposed to be the sword of Hercules. And apparently Arthur likes that one so much that he gives Excalibur to Gawain for a while. Mm. So lots of swords. And of course, we should also draw a distinction between Excalibur, the sword of Arthur, and what's usually called the sword of Might, which is part of the Captain Britain storyline. Those are two different things, too.
Yeah.
They both come from Merlin, but two different things.
There, I think some people may have speculated, like, the first issue that when they were talking about the sword must be drawn, that maybe they were talking about the sword of Might.
Right, because Brian Braddock famously is one of the Captains Britain who chose the amulet, not the sword. And so there, I could see a version of the story where he is given the choice again or something.
And I think, isn't, like, if you choose the sword, you fail the test? Isn't that a part of it?
Something. So people have chosen the sword and been allowed to be Captain Britain, but usually there is some price to pay later.
Okay.
Basically, whichever of the two you choose has an effect on what your powers are, what your costume is, and sort of what ends up happening to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Kelsey Lee, who later becomes the superhero Lionheart, I think.
She chose the sword.
Yeah, she chose the sword. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, ended up being separated from her children for a long time, something like that.
Ew.
And eventually gave up the powers to go back to them.
Okay. Reasonable choice.
Yeah. So sort of my different thing from Excalibur. Also, in the Marvel universe, Excalibur has a twin, the Ebony Blade.
Oh.
Did you know this?
No, I didn't know that.
So the Ebony Blade, in at least one of its origins, because this has been told and retconned and redone over the years, but the origin I know for the Ebony Blade is a meteorite crashes to the Earth in the days of Arthur,
mm-hmm.
and Merlin and Sir Percy forge it into a sword, and to further purify Excalibur, making it even more sort of righteous, they pour all of the evil in Excalibur into the Ebony Blade.
Oh.
So that one is pure good and the other is pure evil.
And apparently, Merlin has something to do with the Phoenix Force.
Yes, something like that.
I know that from a quick look at the wiki, so...
Ah.
There we go.
But yeah, and since then, the Ebony Blade has also been linked to Null, the symbiote god.
Ew.
But I don't think that has... I don't think that's retconned much in terms of the sword's origins. Because again, the sword's origins always involved a meteor from space. So connecting it to a creature from space still works.
Yeah. Well, apparently the King in Black series is very good. The whole King
that's what
in
I've
Black
heard.
Event. Yeah. I just haven't read it because I still have symbiote hangover from like the 90s.
It's funny. I picked up my comics the other day and owner of the shop said, you know, it's good that you had Spider-Man 2099 on your pull list, because this is the first time since the 90s that I have completely sold out of a Spider-Man 2099 comic. And I said, really? Why? And I look at it. Sure enough, there's a Venom on the cover.
Yeah. I remember Venom 2099 was weird looking.
Yes, he had an odd look. All of the 2099 supporting characters looked weird.
Let's not even get started on the X-Men.
Huh? Yep.
Yep.
But yeah, so Excalibur, not that a whole lot of this is necessarily super relevant, but just that the lore for Excalibur goes deep, and much like the character of Captain Britain, is deeply ingrained in sort of the British culture that's being presented here. And I think it's also worth remembering that the way that Otherworld seems to work is that the way things look and appear and behave is sort of based on the collective British subconscious, right? So Excalibur looks the way the British people expect it to look.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're getting here is this kind of ideal hodgepodge version of Excalibur that's built on all of these stories that have accumulated over the years. Sort of just a weird connection, but it's sort of like how the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock is not like telling canonical Sherlock stories, but it is a version of Sherlock Holmes that is an amalgamation of all of the prior versions across popular culture. And so I think that's sort of what's going on with the Marvel Excalibur, is it's sort of this combination of elements from different legends and different versions all made to sort of fit into the Marvel universe.
That makes sense.
And I just also think it's cool that all of the evil from that sword was poured into the Ebony Blade.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
That's cool. Like, that's metal.
Meteorite metal, apparently.
Sorry, I had my Excalibur rant. I'm good.
No, you're fine. Like, yeah, absolutely fine. Although now I think we should probably talk about 2099 at some point.
Yes. There's like, not to go off on a whole other tangent, but there's like two or three miniseries all by Steve Orlando from the last several years that are very good. That all sort of lead into each other.
Okay.
And are horror themed.
Hey! It'd be nice if we did one of those.
To get back to our original purview.
Yeah. If we did one of those someday, that'd be interesting. So, yeah. This issue's good. Just like the last issue was.
It's real good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we take a break and then maybe talk about the second half of this arc?
Yeah, we should do that. Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with a look at Captain Britain and MI-13 right after these. Number three. Even though Captain Britain's not in the book anymore because he's all dead and stuff.
Right. They really should have, like, on the covers for issues 2 and 3, like, just struck through Captain Britain on the cover.
Spoilers. Yeah. There you go. Like green blood, like green scroll, like blood or something. Uh-huh. Just cross it out.
Yep.
Anyway, we'll be right back.
Yes.
Come explore the Hyborian Age and tread the jeweled thrones of Earth with me, Stephen Orr, and the Hither Came Conan podcast. Together, we'll take a look at the adventures of Conan of Cimmeria, the black-haired, selenite barbarian, one comic book issue at a time. From the Marvel comic series that began in 1970 to the currently being published series from Titan Comics and everything in between. Get Hither Came Conan now on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
Is Freddy the fence here?
What you got?
Real diamonds.
No. McVitie's fruit shortcake. Crispy light shortcake with, yes, real fruit. Deliciously different. They are McVitie's.
I could shift a lot of these. Where'd you nick them?
Nick them? I bought them.
He bought them.
McVitie's fruit shortcake. Deliciously different.
Welcome back to Tomb of Ideas. We are continuing our coverage of the Secret Invasion arc of Captain Britain and MI-13. The title of the arc is actually The Guns of Avalon, and we're up to part 3. Same creative team as before, and we open with the Mystic Super Skrull, who again has taken on all of the powers of Otherworld and Avalon, because the Holy Grail and all of the other artifacts of British lore have been reforged into these chains that he's wearing across his chest, like a bandolier. And he imbues a team of 6 other Skrulls who seem to have mystic powers with the Pendragon Force, making them all stronger. And back in London, what's left of the British forces have reconvened at Westminster and are preparing for the final assault, right? This is their last stand. And Black Knight is there, and Faiza Hussein is there, and Black Knight tries to be, like, the heroic good guy and tell Faiza she should go. And she says, no, that's dumb. If you're staying, I'm staying. I have powers now, too. And so they agree to stand and fight together. Meanwhile, in Otherworld, Wisdom and the others are in the midst of this fight with the Super Skrulls, and as Wisdom is saying, we need to evacuate, Spitfire runs him a couple of miles away from the fight so that they can stop and think. And Wisdom says that he's figured out that magic needs sacrifice, and while he's trying to figure out what to do with that knowledge, Spitfire races back into the fight. John the Skrull is making sort of his own last stand. He was left alone in the cave where Excalibur is. He's surrounded by Skrulls. sort of lashing out at them for giving into the fascism of the Skrull Empire. And he reaches out and he grabs Excalibur, planning to heroically draw it and save the day. And it does not budge.
No. No.
But because Excalibur does not budge, Spitfire realizes there is still some magic. There's still some hope. Because something is still keeping that sword in the stone.
Yep.
The mystic Super Skrull leads the Skrull army across the bridge to the waiting army, and Dane and Faiza and the soldiers sort of defiantly stand their ground. Meanwhile, the Fey army of Oberon and Tink and the other sort of giants and fairies and such are fighting the Skrulls and not really doing too well. It doesn't seem like the battle's going well for the magical creatures. Wisdom wants to go and help her, but the voice in his head says to leave her for now, and the voice encourages him to open that door that he was told in no uncertain terms by Oberon should never be opened. And so Wisdom, musing to himself, why does it always have to be him that makes these decisions, opens the door and releases all of the evil magic that had been previously restrained.
I mean, we knew when this door was introduced, it was going to be opened. Like, the minute somebody said, don't touch that door, Chekhov peeked his head and says, hello. And there you go. Sorry. No, hey. Hello. Here we go. Right, that's my Russian accent.
And one of the creatures released from behind that door is Merlin. Merlin the magician.
One of. There's a lot of creatures released from behind that door. We've got Lilith. I think we've got like two different versions of Lilith, in fact.
Yep.
We've got a demon that to me looks a lot like a Juggernaut.
Possibly. That's Sidorak.
Okay.
So that's the creature that gives Juggernaut his powers.
I thought so.
As in the gem of Sidorak.
Okay.
Also, Umar is there. Satanish, that I mentioned before, is there.
It's like a refugee from Real Ghostbusters, right? The one with the face and the stomach?
Yes. So yeah, the Furies mentioned. I don't think you see the Fury, though.
Okay.
But yeah, at least one version of Lilith, plus Sidorak, plus Umar, plus Satanish. I don't think the rest have names. They look sort of like toys from like the fourth or fifth wave of Real Ghostbusters toys.
Yeah.
You know, like after they've gone through all the ones that have names.
Yeah. And after they did Universal Monsters for some reason.
Yep. But again, amidst all of that is also Merlin, who, for what it's worth, had not been seen in Marvel Comics since, what year was this? 2007. So it was a few years earlier.
2 years. Yeah.
2 years earlier, I guess. With X-Men Die by the Sword, which was a Claremont story.
Okay.
And I think in that one, maybe, at some point Merlin had gone crazy and turned villainous. And so that's why he was locked away with the others.
Yeah. Now, is this the Merlin that ages backwards?
Possibly. That is sort of a traditional Merlin thing.
Yeah.
But in any case, Merlin seems to have recovered from his being crazy before. And yeah, so he mentions the Fury. That's what it is. A shard of the Fury pierced his side. While he was imprisoned, he pulled it out, and by pulling it out, drew out his own evil. So he is now cured of his evilness.
Well, that's handy.
Helpful. Good timing.
Yeah.
And then he tells Fury that he should take... Or not Fury. He tells Wisdom he should take a nap. So Wisdom takes a nap.
Yeah.
And as Wisdom sleeps, he dreams, and he sees a ship on the water carrying the body of Brian Braddock, and suddenly, Merlin appears in the streets of London, slamming his staff into the ground. Lightning strikes. It's all very, like, Wizard Shazam, actually.
Yes.
And it appears that Brian Braddock is emerging from out of the ground, because there are hands reaching up through the rocks. There is a scream that everyone hears across all of the ongoing battles. Every single Union Jack flag in the area flies off of its flagpole through the air and wraps itself around his body.
Mm-hmm.
We cut back to Spitfire and John the Skrull. All appears to be lost. They've been captured. and everyone suddenly realizes that he's back and he has the sword.
And by he, we mean
Brian Braddock, Captain Britain.
Captain Britain, yes. Yeah.
And we cut back to Dane and Fiza fighting the mystic Super Skrull. It's not going so well for them. The Super Skrull has Fiza in his clutches when suddenly Captain Britain emerges in a new costume and knocks the Super Skrull aside using Excalibur.
Yep. It's a fine costume. Nothing wrong with it.
I like it.
It's very simple.
It's very this time period, sort of early to mid-2000s, like heading into 2010. Yeah.
I guess they figured the Excalibur era costume was just too ostentatious with the big
boots. It's a little bulky. It's like most, at this point, superhero costumes were trending towards sleek rather than sort of bulky.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one looks less like armor.
Yeah.
Also, what it's worth, it looks a lot like Bucky Barnes' Captain America uniform, which debuted a little before this.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Okay.
Because Bucky's Captain America uniform also had the sort of, like, triangle shape to the flag that pointed down.
Yep, it did. The Alex Ross costume.
Yep, yep. This looks less armored than that, but same visual concept, which I think is why I like it, they sort of echo each other in ways that make sense.
I miss the helmet.
The helmet, I do. I like him having some sort of mask or helmet or something.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he doesn't really have a secret identity to keep.
That makes sense. I mean, everybody knows. Yeah, okay, fine. But, I mean, like, so, like, there was speculation that by some people that, like, before What If, that Peggy Carter was going to be Captain Britain.
I would not have been mad about that.
No, no. And it's pointed out that she doesn't have a mask in that show either.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it looks good. You know, it looks good. I mean, he had the costume for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's back in that costume now, or a variation of it.
Yeah, I have not kept up with his appearances. He's what, Captain Avalon now?
Avalon, yep.
Yeah, so he's wearing sort of, it's got the same lines to it, but the color scheme is different.
Okay, and that makes sense, considering, you know, his role in the multiverse.
Yeah, like, I think last I saw him, he looked like this.
Yeah, I think that's his current costume. And that's what he shows up. I think there's an event in Krakoa, Swords of Krakoa or something like that he's in with that with.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's fine.
I will say, I do like, I always liked the old school red and blue uniform with the lion on the chest and the Union Jack on the mask. That was that was like Marvel UK.
Yeah, the 70s one.
Yeah, but that's the look that Lionheart had.
It is later. The one he was wearing when he was roommates with Peter Parker.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Roommates with Peter Parker for a while. Because they're like, hey, Peter, we got a roommate for you. I'm like, I really don't need a roommate. Plus, it'd be super inconvenient for our secret identity. We'll pay you. Okay, welcome. Welcome, roomie.
Yep, yep.
Another Claremont issue.
So, yeah, there is that one outfit he had in between, where the body was much simpler. It was just sort of red, white, and blue stripes. And the Union Jack was purely on the helmet. I didn't like that one. That one I liked the least.
Okay. It's fine.
It's just sort of boring compared to the classic look.
That's the one he gets a few issues into Excalibur.
Yeah.
Because I guess they want him a little bit less jingoistic.
I guess.
But, you know.
I don't know. But anyway, Captain Britain's had a lot of looks over the years. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. His classic Excalibur look is really great. I have a soft spot for the sort of Lionheart outfit. But as a contemporary where comics were at in the mid-2000s, I think this new look we see on the final panel is solid. It evokes that classic Excalibur look while also being a little bit more modern.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine. The one he had in New Excalibur is actually pretty good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's a little bit more militaristic, but it's still got the Union Jack to it.
Okay.
Hold on. This is from UncannyXMen.net, which, if you ever just want to get an idea of everybody's costumes, is good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like that. It sort of splits the difference between what he gets in this book and what he had in Excalibur.
Exactly. Exactly. It's fine. But again, I do prefer the classic.
With the helmet.
The Alan Moore run, the Alan Davis costume, I guess you would call it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still kicking myself. Last year at Heroes Con, Alan Davis was there, and I didn't go through his line.
That is a mistake.
Yeah, that's such a good look.
It is. Us texting each other pictures is such good audio for a podcast.
Nothing says audio medium like a bunch of images being messaged back and forth.
Yep.
But anyone can, you can all go to the Marvel Wiki and look up Brian Braddock and click gallery and you'll see the pictures we're looking at.
Yeah, Google is a thing, apparently.
Yeah, there's a surprisingly large number of Brian Braddock trading cards, all of which are pictured on the Marvel Wiki.
Ooh.
I count no fewer than 21 cards, all of Brian Braddock.
That's a lot of cards.
Right?
That's a lot of cards. Okay, then. But, yeah, he's back. He's... And the scene where he comes back, like the flags coming around and, like, surrounding him.
That's so good.
It's good. It's super good.
And... Yeah, and Merlin's narration is just the right tone of, like, mystic, mythological, epic kind of thing, right? It's very Gandalf. The symbols come to him. Now he'll be one idea, one symbol. No longer uncertain. No longer one of many. But like their flag, one thing that contains many. All that has been lost. Go and take it back.
Oh, his costume is Britannic. It's terrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're doing it again, Trey. We're looking at costumes being like...
We just slipped into it.
Yeah, we did. Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah. Britannic is bad.
Yeah, super bad. Very 90s.
Yep.
Oh, I forgot he's part of the Hellfire Club at some point.
Huh?
Yep. Man, so much of this is getting cut out.
It's funny that the one where he's called Britannic is the one where he doesn't have any, like, symbols of Britain on his uniform.
Yeah.
It's just red with weird squiggles.
Yeah.
So I say that. I think... If I squint, I can see the outline of the flag just sort of no longer in the patriotic colors.
Mm.
But it's not good. It's real bad.
No.
And he's got a mullet.
It's okay. It's not. I don't think it's a mullet. I don't think that's. Think it's.
Somewhere I can hear Michael Bailey screaming because I said that.
Exactly. Somewhere Michael Bailey is screaming.
Because I misidentified a mullet.
Somewhere in Virginia and he doesn't know why.
Shall we see how the story ends?
Sure. Like, I'm more than happy to, you know, torture Michael Bailey from afar.
Keep looking at pictures of Brian Braddock.
Ooh, Brian. No. So, we go from there. There's a big fighty fight between Brian Braddock and the Skrull Mage. Meanwhile, is working on... doctoring Black Knight, who got knocked the fuck out last time. Then Brian flies over and we see how, you know, Brian drew Excalibur previously. We get a little bit of flashback here, by the way.
And a
lot of this is being explained to Pete Wisdom, who has just woken up in Skrull captivity.
And his line is, wait, that dream was real?
Yeah, and they're recapping what has happened for both us and Pete Wisdom,
and also the voice, which again I think the voice was supposed to be Merlin, right?
It was.
Yeah, the voice does what I did a little while ago and goes through the laundry list of names that Arthur's sword has had.
Yeah, it has also pulled up the Wikipedia article,
but it's a real good page. I like that page.
The Wikipedia page, or
no, the page of him drawing the sword.
Oh, the comic. That's right. We're talking about the comic.
The thing
right
we're
now.
Talking about.
The comics, yeah. Not various wiki pages that have caught our fancy. Then, you know, he slices up some Skrulls real good. Excalibur apparently is like the Shinsu knives of magical swords. It slices, it dices, it rallies a nation behind it. And there's a bit there, you know, where the Skrulls are like, hey, you aren't actually friends of Reed Richards, who's our big beef, so, you know, if you want to be our lieutenants, that's fine. And John basically tells them where they can go, and so they blow John's head off.
I am very sad about this part.
Yeah, it's the second saddest death of John Lennon, I think. And for this one, we don't have Howard Cosell to tell the country about it.
Right.
Did you know that, like, the country found out about John Lennon's death from Howard Cosell from Monday Night Football? Like,
that's wild.
He has
they wouldn't have had, like, the cutaway to breaking news thing. They would have just had whoever was on the air say the thing. Yeah.
And he's like, should I say something? And he's like, well, and you can hear him saying, like, well, if you don't say something, you have an obligation to say something. And
right,
it's really news.
I don't care what's on the line, Howard. You have got to say what we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous, perhaps, of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival. Hard to go back to the game after that news flash, which in duty bound we had to take. Frank?
It's really painful, the whole thing. Anyway, speaking of painful, Faiza is trying very hard to put Black Knight back together, but the scroll magic keeps on pulling him apart again. This is where she realized that he has a heart of stone, which apparently is a after effect of that time he got turned into scroll, into stone for hundreds of years. There's that's a whole thing in his back history. Then Brian cuts the big magic amalgam chain with his Excalibur, and the magic returns to Avalon, and that's, of course, when the monsters of Avalon, particularly Satanus, come in and just start stomping scrolls, which is lots of fun. And
right. It is my right to conquer this place, therefore I'm going to destroy you for trying to conquer it first, basically his perspective.
Exactly. There's some more fighty fight. Pete Wisdom makes a deal with Satanus, basically saying, hey, I freed you. And Satanus is like, fine, I owe you one boon. And Pete Wisdom is like, one? Really? Right. Just one? come on.
And so, like, he goes full Wanda Maximoff.
No more scrolls. No more scrolls. Which was still very fresh at the time when this came out. Because what was that? That was 2004. This is just 4 years later.
Yeah, that's a deliberate reference. Especially the close-up on his mouth as he says it. That's all
absolutely
very deliberate.
Absolutely. And so all the scrolls in Britain burst into flames.
Seems a little traumatic, actually.
A little traumatic. And apparently any scroll who tries to enter Britain gets the same treatment. And the team is reunited. Brian sticks the sword back in a stone, being like, okay, the sword deserves a champion who hasn't used it to kill, so I'm gonna leave it here for its next champion. And he and Pete Wisdom decide that, you know what, Britain needs a team, because Pete, you just let out all the evil magic in the world, so right, we're gonna need to.
This is very much a 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo situation.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
And so Vincent Price has to team up with them to hunt down all of the evil spirits.
Exactly. That's exactly the case here. I wouldn't be surprised if that's exactly what inspired Paul Cornell.
Only you can return the demons to the chest.
Warriors!
Because you let them out.
That joke was entirely for you, James.
I appreciate that. That show's so bad. And yet we get Vincent Price, so we watch it anyway.
Right. I mean, you have to take the Vincent Price with the Scrappy.
Anyway, they decide, we're going to form a team, and they go off together, heroes into, not quite the sunset, heroes into the cloud of debris. And
right.
And then Merlin appears over Faiza's shoulder. It's like, you should take them the sword. It's like, we're like, oh, hey, guys, do you need this? Pulls the sword from the stone. Like, it's not been 5 minutes.
Right, right.
And apparently the blade is drawn again. And that's where the issue ends. And
I love how she looks mortified once she realizes what she's done.
Yes.
And is like, I can put it back. I am sorry.
She could have done a lot in this comic. She's like,
yes.
Like, there's a point where, like, Black Knight's like, okay, you're with us now. Because, like, you need to come with us because you're a superhero now. It's like, no, I'm not. Okay, maybe I am. Like, she has a few little exchanges like that, which is very cute.
She is very much, like, proto-Kamala Khan.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Like the superhero fandom. It's not quite as pronounced as Kamala Khan, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of viewpoint character of she's our way into seeing all of these other more powerful heroes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm certain there is a certain segment of, I hate to call them the fandom because I don't think they're real fans, who probably have a real problem with a woman in hijab pulling Excalibur. But to those people, we say, fuck off then.
Yes. Yes.
That's what we say to those people. This series is so much fun, Trey.
It really is. I like this issue is really where we get sort of the pitch for how this book will differentiate itself from previous books that were maybe similar, right? Mm-hmm. This is not Excalibur. This is a superhero team that exists within the governmental command structure. It's mm-hmm. not. It's not run by intelligence operatives, but it's supported by intelligence operatives. And so you do get this blending of people like Wisdom, who are fully in the sort of UK intelligence structure, and people like Brian, who are just full on superheroes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
Whereas I think in Excalibur, the tension between government and team was maybe a little bit stronger. Like, they didn't always get along with your Alistair Stewarts and so on.
Yes, who's, again, a substitute for UNIT for anybody
right,
who
right.
Is not familiar with 90s. Like, Chris Claremont really thought he was speaking his own secret language there. Like, there's a show called Doctor Who, and not many people have seen it, but I'm going to...
Like, he was the only one watching PBS or something.
Yeah. No, Mr. Claremont, we get PBS here. Thank you. God, Chris Claremont. Chris Claremont never met something he wasn't willing to lift from.
Not like, really, no.
No, it's like, oh, I like Star Trek. This Shi'ar ship from like the beginning of the Phoenix Saga is going to be exactly a copy of the Enterprise.
And I don't know if that's, I mean, I'm sure it was partly him, but I mean, the artists were probably involved in that too. But,
Dave Cockrum, so yes.
Yeah, Dave Cockrum, for a while there, every spaceship Dave Cockrum drew had nacelles.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So our because John the Skrull dies, our one real sort of breakout character who joins the team is Faiza Hussein. I like her a lot, and I will continue to like her throughout this book. I think her powers are cool. They are they're very weird, but they are a uniquely like they're just such an interesting take on healing powers compared to the more generic like Dungeons and Dragons healing spell type, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more like magic surgery,
mm-hmm.
which is cool.
So like, do all the magic items get restored once the chain is shattered? They just return. Okay.
Yes. I think that's said somewhere. I'm trying to find the page now.
I know they say the magic's back, but like, do the actual items get restored?
I think they do because again, they are symbols. And they are constructed mm-hmm. from the collective British imagination. And I know I saw it on one of these pages. Maybe they don't explicitly say it. I read it to be that breaking the chain restores the items.
That's good, because I was getting really pissed when they melted down the Holy Grail.
Right, right. Yeah. Somewhere Harrison Ford is screaming, that belongs in a museum.
Dear. Like, I'm pretty sure the Lady in the Lake gets restored. The Green Knight gets restored.
Right, right.
It's fucking magic, dudes. It's magic. Yes. Come on.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't have rules it needs to apply to, except when it does.
Except when it matters.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, this series is so much fun, Trey.
It really is good. and it's a good lineup, you know? Like, these are characters who, at this point in comics, had been underrepresented and underserved by Marvel, right? Like, Captain Britain didn't really have a spot anymore because Excalibur was over. Dane Whitman wasn't in the Avengers regularly anymore. Fire certainly didn't have a place to show up.
No, no. A little disappointed that, like, Union Jack doesn't show up.
Right. So I think a promise that these first four issues make, that I don't know that the series is able to fully capitalize on because it ends so soon, but the promise of the series was that technically every British superhero is a member of MI-13 and can be called in as needed. So it's sort of superhero Mission Impossible, right? Where they're going to assemble the team they need for the mission they have. That's kind of the pitch here.
Okay.
And I don't think it ran long enough to fully pay off.
Yeah, because we get, you know, Union Jack name dropped, Captain Midland's name dropped.
Right. Captain Midland's definitely shows up. He's a Paul Cornell creation, though.
Okay, yeah, that'll do it.
I can't remember if Union Jack shows up.
You know what we can do?
What's that?
We could read the next few issues.
We could.
Yeah.
We could. Because certainly the other part of this book's pitch is that they're tracking down all of the weird evil magic shit that got released. And so I think weird evil magic shit is very much in the purview of Tomb of Ideas.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, the next big story arc involves an old friend of ours, old Fang Face himself.
Morbius?
No.
Oh, you said friend. You said you implied that we like this person. Okay.
But of course,
that movie still with me.
Still leaves a mark.
A little bit.
Oh dear. Yeah, I think the next story arc is all Dracula, right?
I don't know if the whole thing is Dracula.
Okay.
There's some subplots I think that build up to that, but. Okay.
But it's definitely Blade on the cover of the next issue.
Yes, Blade, because one of the things that I very much remember this in sort of comics reporting at the time was everybody having to be like, oh, right, Blade is British, isn't he?
That wasn't something that came over the series?
Everyone was so used to Wesley Snipes, who is very much not British.
Oh, God, can you imagine Wesley Snipes doing a British accent?
I'd rather not.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so that's actually sort of our first instance of we will recruit whoever we need to recruit for the mission, right? Is, oh, right, technically he's British. That means he's a member of the team. For what it's worth, just I happened to glance forward a little bit. It looks like Union Jack Joe Chapman does show up in this next arc.
Hey, that's good. So, yeah, we're going to come back, I think, next episode and talk more about this series, like the rest of the series.
Yeah, we'll keep working our way through it. That sounds good,
yeah. So that's your homework, lovely listeners. I just really love British superheroes. I don't know what to say. It's especially good. The Marvel British superheroes.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think, who are our British superheroes in DC Universe? We've got Knight and Squire. You see, without Googling.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, there's others. Is Jason Blood British?
Yes, he was in Camelot.
John Constantine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's British.
Yeah, I'm sure there's others. Shining Knight.
Okay, so was Pete Wisdom supposed to be Marvel's Constantine?
Probably a little bit. I think he's a Warren Ellis creation. So that would make sense.
Yeah.
Because I think he was created when Warren Ellis was on Excalibur, maybe?
You're right. He was. I'm really excited for more issues of this book. So
yeah, it's good. It's fun. It's and people, if you've not read it before, it's been collected. I think there's two or three trade paperbacks of it. And of course, it's on digital marketplace of your choice.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess this issue's been this episode's been all over the place because, again, we're really excited about it.
Yeah.
I've had too much.
It's
caffeine.
Also been a minute. So we've missed you guys. We've been excited to talk about stuff.
Yeah. That isn't. This Star Trek X-Men novel.
Yeah.
That I'm just going to put in this drawer. And
I did read Star Trek Green Lantern in its entirety. That was fun, actually.
Oh, but we can't cover it on the show.
It's too bad that's not a Marvel book.
Until Disney buys everything. No.
Well, the way Warner Brothers is going.
Oh, God. Oh, Warner Brothers makes me so mad.
Yeah.
So mad.
Yeah.
Like, there was that brief moment where, like, is Warner Brothers going to buy Paramount? Oh, God, please don't buy Paramount.
Yeah.
Oh, that was, oh.
But we have had so much fun talking about the secret invasion arc of Captain Britain and MI-13 that we're just going to do the rest. So, yeah. Again, this book ran for 15 issues plus an annual. We yep. can probably split that up a little bit. There's basically two more story arcs plus the annual.
Right.
So we're thinking we'll do those two arcs as separate episodes.
Yeah. And I'm on spring break right now, so I have more time to edit episodes. So rather than holding us to our strict 2-week schedule, I will try to get these out as quickly as I can.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do. Yeah.
For you, love this, because you've had to go without for a while now.
Yeah. So if you're planning to read along with us, the next episode, we will be talking about the Hell Comes to Birmingham arc, which is Captain Britain and MI-13 numbers 5 through 10.
Yep. Yep. And it promises to be good, because I don't remember what happens in this one. I remember what happened in the Secret Invasion ones, but I don't remember.
I remember at least the broad strokes of this one.
Okay. Because, like, my brain immediately goes from, ooh, scrolls. Ooh, vampire cannon on the moon. It kind of glosses over what happens between. So that'll be interesting for me. But lovely listeners, if you have fond memories of this title, or, you know, you're mad at us for being gone for so long, or mad at us for coming back,
or really want to change our minds about that Star Trek X-Men novel.
Ooh, that is a hard track for them.
Like, you are welcome to attempt that uphill climb.
Okay. Oh, I think that came up a little bit. But of course,
You're just thinking about Picard and Storm again, weren't you?
Oh, or Beverly on the holodeck. Xavier. Somewhere Wesley screams. He doesn't know why. But you can always reach out to us. Oh, if you have Beast issues you want to talk about, because apparently we're going to do that at some point.
Absolutely, because that is a thing we will do.
We will definitely do an all Beast episode. Mm-hmm. Please let us know. Oh god, that means we haven't managed to do Beauty and the Beast, the Dazzler series.
I've never read that, actually.
I mean, they just did it for the joke title.
Sure. I mean, I would.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not proud. But of course, speaking of not proud, please reach out to us. Our email address is tombofideas@gmail.com. We're on social media. Most of our handles are at Tomb of Ideas, like Blue Sky at Tomb of Ideas. That site that's dead to us at Tomb of Ideas. Facebook is facebook.com/tombofideas. Please make sure to rate us and review us on iTunes, because apparently that does something.
Yeah, we don't mention that often enough, but no. It does matter. It helps other people find the show, which, you know, if you like the show, you should probably want other people to hear it too. It'd be nice. Don't keep it to yourself. Don't gatekeep.
Yeah, I imagine if you are listening to us right now, you like the show, or right.
If you've made it this far,
you're gathering blackmail information on me, I suppose, is a possibility, and something I'll be paranoid about now. So, yay.
But yes, please rate, review, leave feedback, tell us what information you have on James.
What? Hold on.
Name your price.
What? No. Leave my search history alone.
And of course, we're proud members of the Cinepunks podcasting group. You can find our back catalog on cinepunks.com. That's Cinepunks with an X. It's the home of a lot of great shows as well. The flagship Cinepunks show, which released, I think, 2 episodes this week, maybe? They're sort of on a roll. We need to catch up with them. Yeah. Shame List, Carnage Report, all of the various Cinema Smorgasbord shows. Lots of great stuff out there. In fact, Cinema Smorgasbord, a couple weeks ago, I think, did an episode on the Doctor Who audio drama that Eric Roberts did.
I've been
meaning to check that one out.
Speaking of Doctor Who audio dramas and Paul Cornell, did you see that one of his novels is getting adapted into a Big Finish drama?
I did, and that's really cool, because one of my all-time favorite Doctor Who stories is Human Nature / Family of Blood, which he wrote the teleplay for, but in writing the teleplay, he adapted his own novel, which was an earlier Doctor Who story. Yep. So I'm a big fan of Paul Cornell's Doctor Who writing.
Yes. definitely a big fan of Paul Cornell. We should get him on the show sometime.
That would be cool.
That would be fun. Yeah. Anyway, lovely listeners, until we see you next time, cheerio.
You have been listening to the Tomb of Ideas, a Marvel horror podcast. Until next time, Tombers, Excelsior.
I'm gonna get an angry text message from Andy. Don't actually say that.
At least neither of us once said anything about merry old England.
Mary Poppins! What?
Oh, what ho, Pip Pip!
Oh, jolly good then.
Core blimey. I should work that into my repertoire. Core blimey.
And again, now Andy is screaming somewhere and doesn't know why.
I've been rewatching the show Hustle, which was sort of like British Leverage, basically. There's a lot of core blimeys in that.
Yeah, there is. I remember seeing that. I watched that show back in the day, and I saw the thing for Leverage. I'm like, isn't just Hustle?
Yeah. So like, the difference is Leverage is if Hustle was also the A-Team.
Okay. But it also has the actress from Coupling in it.
Yes.
Not the blonde actress, not the redhead actress, but the brunette
Gina Hellman. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. The one that was, she was in that Jekyll and Hyde series that.
Yep. That Moffat and Gaddis did.
Speaking of Doctor Who connections.
That was sort of their pre-Sherlock project.
That's right. And then they did. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of funny. They've been hitting the public domain highlights of like British stuff. They did Jekyll and Hyde. They did Sherlock. They did Dracula. They should do a Frankenstein.
That would be interesting. You haven't said goodbye yet.
Oh, cheerio.
No, I said that already. You got some notes. God save the queen or something. Come on, man. Keep the night. Well, not save the queen anymore. I guess God save the king.
Ta-ta.
I'm sorry, Andy. That's going to be.
Is it tea time?
Oh, you can go for a spot of tea.
And a crumpet?
Non-caffeinated.
I like crumpets. I might actually have some crumpets now that I think about it.
I actually have some in my freezer.
Although every time I have a crumpet, I think of the line from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where Raphael says,
"You gotta know what a crumpet is to understand cricket."
That's not cricket.